fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. The first Basketball Africa League Combine will end later Thursday in New York. The two-day scouting event features aspiring players from Africa, the United States, and around the world. The players are showing their skills in front of scouts, coaches, and executives from teams across Africa, participating in the qualifying tournaments for the inaugural season of the Basketball Africa League, or BAL. The 12-team BAL is a joint effort between the National Basketball Association and FIBA, the International Basketball Federation, and the new league is scheduled to begin play in March 2020. To learn more, VOA's Adam Phillips caught up with BAL President Amadou Gallo-Fall during a practice session at the Brooklyn Nets Training Center in New York. Amadou begins by saying he hopes his own personal story will inspire young African basketball players.
A lot of the stuff I do is really an outgrowth of my own story. Everything starts with having an opportunity.
Tell me a little bit about your own story. I'd like to know a little bit about your story so people can be inspired by it or learn from it.
So I had an opportunity to play this game and ultimately was given a chance to come to the U.S. to get an education because somebody offered me an athletic scholarship to come to the University of the District of Columbia. And because I have met a mentor, and a, you know, big-hearted person, that's really where it all started. And from there, a Division II school, just to show that you can make your story from different background, different vantage point, different starting point. What's important is to have that starting point. That scholarship opened the door for me, and that's why you always stay humble and really let your work talk. You're also committed to giving back, to empowering other young people. That's what drives me, and that's what really ushered a lot of what we're doing today on the continent, using basketball under the umbrella of the NBA brand to build youth and now to build an industry, you know, because we think that basketball is going to be a growth engine on the continent.
So that's the other side of it. Part of it is the development and the, and helping people, just helping them live out their potential on a, sort of on an individual level, but it's also about business.
Absolutely, but it's an evolution, you know. We didn't come and start talking about what kind of marketing partners you can sign and what kind of investors. We decided to come and invest our own resources to prime the market, so to speak, to get the sport relevant, to expose as many young people as possible to a great game, and to see a talent pool emerge from the continent and also from the grassroots, whether it's through our seed project or some of the work that Maasai does with the Giants of Africa. All our junior NBA league that we've launched across Africa, Basketball Without Borders, which we ran the 17th edition this past July in Dakar, Senegal, to see now players emerge from these grassroots activities to make it into the NBA. Some of the recognizable names who are global superstars, Joel Embiid and also Pascal Siakam winning the NBA championship with the Toronto Raptors and being the most improved player in our league last year from Cameroon. So we have proof of concept, you know.
It must be so gratifying.
Extremely. Just proud of all those young people who are continuing to write their stories. Very proud of what Maasai achieved with Toronto also winning the championship. And to see a growing number of other young people who are making their marks in the front offices across our league, whether it's from the Washington Wizards, so Pabst Mensah-Bansu, or in Philadelphia, I saw Ruben Bumche here, and there's another young man, Remy Njai, who's at the Sixers, Deche Fall, at the Denver Nuggets, Luka Desta from the Lakers now. A lot of stories, but the narrative and really gets even better for me when we go beyond the court and then you see people having an impact around the game and off the court.
We're so lucky to have you.
I'm lucky to be here. That's really the approach. And this is why this thing never feels like work, and especially when you see others kind of emerging and taking the path, you know, to doing big things and keeping always in mind that they have to come back and plow back and give back and inspire that next generation.
We have all these listeners at Sunnyside of Sports. Tell me, what you'd like to say to them? Is there something like you'd like to give to these listeners?
I'd like to keep following, and there's an exciting new product coming across Africa, the Basketball Africa League. You know, the reason why we are here today, 50 young players that we brought with over 20 countries from the continent, from clubs coming to, you know, evaluate talent. This is the first. So the Basketball Africa League in 10 years is going to be the best professional basketball outside of the United States. And we're very excited that it's going to be an African product that is going to be broadcasted to a Pan-African audience and a global audience. Keep tuning in. We're looking forward to producing great stories out of Africa, and sports are the growth engine for the aspiring African economies.
That's Amadou Gallo Fall, the president of the new Basketball Africa League. Amadou spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And this Sunny Side of Sports programming note, Adam will have more on the Basketball Africa League Combine on Friday's show. In National Basketball Association action Wednesday night, Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks blew out the host Detroit Pistons for their 13th consecutive victory, the longest winning streak in the NBA this season. We'll hear from Giannis now in this report by the AP's Denny Kapp in Detroit.
Giannis Antetokounmpo nets a game-high 35 as the Bucks win their 13th straight with a 127-103 knockout of the Pistons. Milwaukee spotted Detroit a two-point lead after one quarter and went on to outscore the Pistons 70-48 over the middle two quarters, behind Antetokounmpo's sixth game of 35 or more points this season.
It was a time that we started complaining a lot about calls and, you know, our focus went out of the game, but once our focus came back to the game and we decided to do what we do.
Eric Bledsoe added 13, 6 boards and 6 assists to help the Bucks improve to an Eastern Conference best 19-3. Andre Drummond notched his 18th double-double of the season, posting 23-14, but his Pistons were denied their first three-game winning streak of the season. Instead, they fall to 8-14. Denny Kapp, Detroit.
Thanks, Denny. Denny mentioned how the Bucks improved their Eastern Conference best record to 19 wins and 3 losses. The Los Angeles Lakers lead the Western Conference with that same 19-3 record. The Lakers scored a big 121-96 road victory against the Utah Jazz Wednesday night. Anthony Davis scored 26 points for the Lakers, while teammate LeBron James added 20 points and 12 assists. Now let's go to Pretoria, where a top official of the Nigerian mission in South Africa says sports can be used to enhance relations between the two countries. Kabiru Bala is the Nigerian High Commissioner to South Africa. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, he said sports can be a unifying force in diplomatic relations.
Well, surely, of course, I believe sports has that capacity to bring about unity among people. You know, even in our country, whenever there is a sporting activity, it tends to bring about a unity in the country. And I believe if we could promote something like that, sporting activities between Nigeria and South Africa, surely there will be some kind of unity between the two communities, between the two countries. And incidentally, not quite long ago, AIMBA was here and they had a sporting activity in Mpumalanga where they came on top. So I believe if we can do even more of that, then surely there is going to be some kind of cohesion, some kind of unity. And incidentally, we have an agreement on culture, sports and arts. which is there. And unfortunately, we have not given it much attention. But with the visit of the president now, those agreements, including that about interactions and sporting activities, will be re-energized. And surely, when we do, surely see some kind of unity, some kind of cohesion, and some kind of understanding between, because really, what is missing is that interaction between the two people.
Are there areas you feel Nigeria can benefit from South Africa, technically as in form of training in the sporting arenas, you know, having lived in this country? Are there specific areas you feel Nigerian athletes or Nigerian officials in sports can benefit?
Surely there are a lot of benefits that I remember one group of Nigerians that came early in the year or in the middle of the year. And they did some sporting about this in bowling. They came here, and I think the facilities for bowling here are very much advanced. And the group that came from Nigeria for bowling activity, they testified that, yes, there is a lot that they can learn from this thing, and that they will work towards making bowling an interesting event, a popular event in Nigeria. So that area, surely there is something there. Now here is a, this country is a, it's a rugby nation. They, like, when they are playing rugby, the whole country will come to a standstill. For us in Nigeria, well, rugby maybe is not even known, perhaps. Maybe it's something that we can learn.
The Nigerian national coach, rugby national coach, is a South African. Yes, he's a South African. So maybe, do you think that we should have more of such coaches to train Nigerians in other sporting aspects?
Of course, we can have them, since they are now even world champions of the rugby that was just recently played in Japan. If we can have the, of course, they have the technical expertise, they have the experience, they have the history, the background behind them. And if it is something that they are interested, which I can testify, because when it happened last time, the whole country came to a standstill. If we can also grow our own rugby team, that would be a fine thing. So we will be expanding the frontiers of cooperation between the two countries, not only in soccer or football. We should be able to expand the areas where we can compete with other countries. Yes, there are limited areas where we are, have the age, but we should be aspiring to even expand the frontier so that we can have even more competition and even more to win even more laurels in areas of sports. It has the capacity to unite. It has the capacity to bring about understanding among nations, and surely we will do the best that we can. I think I will take this now to be part of what my agenda will be for 2020 by the grace of God.
That's Kabiru Bala, Nigeria's High Commissioner to South Africa, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye in Pretoria, South Africa. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In pro boxing, fight fans are looking forward to Saturday's World Heavyweight title rematch between Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua in Saudi Arabia. Joining us now with a preview is VOA's Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Last June, world heavyweight champion Andy Ruiz Jr. produced one of boxing's biggest upsets when he ended Anthony Joshua's undefeated record by technical knockout. Now they are set to enter the ring once again this Saturday in a highly anticipated rematch. And on Wednesday, the two heavyweights addressed the media in Saudi Arabia, where Ruiz said he hopes to retain his title and make history.
It's been a long 3 months in camp. We've been training really hard for this moment. Just like June 1st, you know, I made my dreams come true. I made history. And I think the important thing is to remain and make history December 7th here in Saudi Arabia.
The Mexican-American heavyweight champion knows Joshua is going to come out swinging, and he says he's prepared to make any adjustments to fend off his challenger.
I think it all depends of how he turns out, you know, how he comes out at first. I don't know if he's going to want to box me around, try to win me by points, but best believe, of course, I'm going to be attacking. I'm the pressure fighter. I'm the attacker, so best believe I'm going to be the one. Try to look for that knockout and try to get that KO.
For his part, Briton Anthony Joshua, who is no stranger to challenging for the world title, is on a quest to regain his place on the throne, and he called Ruiz his next target.
In my 16th fight, I challenged for the world title, challenged for the world title again with Klitschko, challenged again with Parker, and now I'm challenging for the world title again, so it's my fourth title challenge in a short space of time, but I'm used to this position. And even when you are champion, I think Andy, as a respected heavyweight, knows that you always have to have a challenger mindset. All of these quotes that us fighters come up with is reality, challenger mindset. And I've always said that previously when I had the belts around my waist, and now I'm speaking it into existence. This is the challenger mindset. So I call it back to 16, back to my 16th fight, hungry, determined, and focused on the goal.
And the former heavyweight champion was asked if regaining his belt on Saturday will be a special moment in his career.
No, because I know I belong there. So it's not special. I know I belong there. I know what I'm capable of doing. So when I regain those belts, I'm probably just going to keep cool and stay focused, because it's not a time to celebrate. It's time to keep that challenger mindset and move on to the next target. So one by one, I'm picking them off. As you can see, I said on that board, I've been doing that ever since I started boxing, and Ruiz is just my next target on my list.
Saturday's Middle East bout, dubbed the Clash on the Dunes, had originally been set to take place in the UK, but was relocated to the small northwestern Riyadh town of Diriyah in Saudi Arabia. Fight promoter Eddie Hearn says the reason for the switch was to, frankly, follow the money.
One of the major reasons we're here. The other reason is that Andy Ruiz wanted a neutral venue. You know, the first fight took place in America, where he's from. We were going to do the second one in Cardiff. He didn't want to come to Cardiff. He moaned. He preferred this option. The package was outstanding for both fighters. And I think that when you're talking about a sport like boxing that is so dangerous, is so brutal, no one really has the right to tell a fighter where they can and can't go. And ultimately, a fighter will always look at the package and the purse that he's receiving for the risk that he's taking when he's going into the ring. So both guys chose this as an option, and we move forward.
And Saudi Arabia is fully committed to hosting the first world heavyweight title fight to happen in the Middle East. 6 weeks ago, construction began on the 15,000-seat Diriyah Arena, a stadium that was built solely for the upcoming rematch. Work is now complete in time for Saturday's fight, and the stage is set for Ruiz versus Joshua Part 2, a match that's being considered the biggest fight of 2019. And that is all from me. Back over to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And this Sunny Side of Sports programming note, on Friday's show, our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Mueta, will break down the Ruiz-Joshua rematch in Saudi Arabia. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America, VOA.
I'm VOA Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In African athletics, a new international marathon is planned in Benin for 2020. We'll hear the official announcement now from a top actor who is from Benin, and then VOA's Jim Stevenson will tell us more.
Next year, the Jaime Nwusu Foundation will launch an international cultural sports event called the Gate of Return Marathon and Festival in Benin, West Africa.
Two-time Academy Award nominee actor Jaime Nwusu was at the United Nations to announce the marathon race and festival in his native Benin. This past Monday marked the International Day for the Abolition of Slavery. The Gate of No Return in Benin is a statue that depicts two figures in an embrace. There are identical statues in Liverpool and Richmond, Virginia, to represent the triangle of the transatlantic slave trade between Africa, the United States, and Europe.
My dream for the Gate of No Return is to create an international symbol of triumph over slavery and to heal the wounds that slavery left behind. The Gate of No Return itself, a UNESCO World Heritage monument that marks a place where over a million of Africans were sold into slavery and shipped off to the New World.
Nwusu says the 42-kilometer marathon will represent a symbolic journey.
The marathon would follow a symbolic course from the Reconciliation Statue in the city of Cotonou and succeed along the beach to the Gate of No Return in the village of Ouidah. The event will attract an international field of runners, and in a final act of homecoming, the runners will finish the marathon by passing through the historic Gate of No Return and symbolically converting the monument into a Gate of Return.
He says the marathon will help to overcome forms of slavery that still exist.
The Gate of No Return marathon and festival will raise funds to help save young girls and women who were sold into sex trafficking. Will raise funds to fight these forms of modern slavery, to fight human trafficking in Africa, and provide financial support to former child slaves.
Have you ever dreamed of owning a Formula One race car? Two of legendary Formula One driver Michael Schumacher's cars were auctioned off ahead of the 2019 season-ending Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.
The 2002 Ferrari F2002. An amazing opportunity, certainly, an incredible example from the V10 era, driven to victory by none other than Michael Schumacher at San Marino, the Austrian Grand Prix, and the French Grand Prix, contributing to Michael's fifth world championship title, the most dominant championship season to date in Grand Prix history.
How much was paid for the car?
And selling on my left, if we're all done, on your right, is $5,900,000 at $5,900,000. $5,900,000.
Then up for sale,
the 1992 Benetton B192, driven by Michael Schumacher in the 1992 FIA Formula One World Championship, to a podium finish in the German and Italian Grand Prix, and the fourth in Great Britain as well.
It went for the relative bargain price of
$725,000. Going once at $725,000. Going twice at $725,000. Fair warning at $725,000. $725,000.
If the cars were a bit too pricey, there was also a less expensive Formula One slot car racetrack
that has been signed by the very same drivers on tomorrow's grid, custom built by Slot Mods in Detroit. These are without doubt the top of the line slot car tracks in the world.
The bidding ended by
selling the cars and the racetrack at $40,000. At $40,000. Yours, sir. $40,000. Well done. Thank you.
The proceeds from the sales of Schumacher's iconic cars went to the Keep Fighting Michael Foundation, which was set up after the German suffered life-changing injuries following a skiing accident in December 2013.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. And I encourage our Voice of America listeners to check out Jim's weekly Game Room podcast via voanews.com. More boxing news. Middleweight champion Bernard Hopkins of the United States, four-division champion Juan Manuel Marquez of Mexico, three-division champ Shane Mosley of the USA, and women's star Christy Martin, also of the USA, were elected to the International Boxing Hall of Fame in Canastota, New York. This was the first year women were on the ballot, and Barbara Butrick of England and Lucia Riker of the Netherlands joined Martin as the first female boxers elected. Butrick was elected in the Trailblazers category, while Martin and Riker were elected in the Modern category. Also elected by members of the Boxing Writers Association were promoters Lou DiBella and Kathy Duva. Congratulations to all the inductees to the International Boxing Hall of Fame. And that wraps up the December 5th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Buckley, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers using a variety of space and ground-based telescopes say they have spotted a very rare system of three monster black holes that are on the path to a spectacular collision and merger. The triple black hole system was discovered at the center of three galaxies that had merged with each other. This trinary system is said to be located about a billion light years away and are each separated by distances that range between 10,000 to 30,000 light years. Astronomers say they found evidence that the giant black holes are actively feeding on surrounding material. The system was first spotted by the ground-based Sloan Digital Sky Survey in New Mexico. NASA space telescopes such as WISE, Chandra, Hubble, and NuSTAR were also used to gather data on the triple black hole system. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on the Voice of America.